Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is America on the Road, named Best Radio Show by the International Automotive Media Conference, and now in its 30th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. I'm Jack Nerad. With me is co-host Chris Teague. Chris, so good to see you.
You as well, Jack. How was the early springtime in Southern California for you?
It's working out pretty well. We've had some rain here, but sunny today, and I think that's a good thing. Most often it's sunny here in Southern California, so that is terrific. And I think you're having unseasonably warm temperatures in Maine, huh?
Yeah, we've got the geese are back from down south and the ducks are out on the river. So I think everything's starting to wake up a little bit, which is a welcome change for me.
Yeah, the ducks are out of the river. I love that. Classic line. Well, let's dive into this. Leading the news this week, Consumer Reports says that retailers across the country could be the salvation of the troubled electric car infrastructure. That's severely limiting EV growth, as you know, Chris. So we'll see about that. The problem with that is it flies in the face of the findings of Auto Pacific, an Auto Pacific study that describes what EV owners want in recharging stations. So we'll give you the details and our reactions and all of that controversy coming up. Meanwhile, one highly touted electric vehicle company is looking for its salvation of its own. It's grabbing desperately for a lifeline as it tries to stave off bankruptcy. And we'll tell you more about that and who the company is and who the possible savior is. Got some interesting aspects to it as well. We'll also give you some details on why Apple has finally officially pulled the plug on its once promising Apple Car development program. So it seems like a car isn't a smartwatch after all. Good to know. A lot to talk about, right, Chris?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an exciting week in the industry.
Yeah, tons going on. Let's do a little business. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com, EMLancey.com, the publisher of my latest book, Dance in the Dark, and Mercury Insurance. If you're looking to save some money, you should switch to Mercury for your auto and home insurance. Californians save an average of $670 with Mercury, so imagine how much you could save. Get a quote today at DrivingToday.com/autoinsurance. That's DrivingToday.com/auto-insurance. Well, as you longtime listeners know, Chris lives at one end of the country. I live at the other. You got some sense of where we live based on the earlier portion of the program here. Each week we get together to talk about cars, the car industry, and how you can save some money on your car. And of course, we road test a couple of cars. What's your road test vehicle, Chris?
I drove the 2024 Hyundai Ioniq 6 Limited. It's very, very interestingly styled EV, not an SUV, and I can't wait to tell you all about it.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to hear about it. I'm driving drove the 2024 Volvo S90 Recharge with one of the most complicated powertrains on planet Earth, but we'll talk about that. Our special guest is Tiago Castro. He's Midwest Regional Vice President of Nissan North America, so he'll have a lot to say about what's going on with Nissan, and we'll have some questions for him about that. So a lot to go in this show, a lot for you in the show. So stay with us. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road. Welcome back to America on the Road with Chris T. Jack Nerad back with you. And we're so glad you're with us. We do appreciate you joining us on America on the Road. It's something that honors us. We're happy to have you with us. And it's news time. And there's an interesting story, I think, from Consumer Reports. They put out a study that they did, suggesting that retail stores can help EV adoption by adding more charging stations. Just throwing up charging stations into parking lots is something that they suggest could be a good thing. I think there are something like 270,000 store locations across major retail categories. And there's not charging at many of these stores, many of these locations, the big box stores that we're all used to, you know, the Costco's and Home Depot's and Best Buy's and all of those. Grocery stores don't have very many charging stations. Department stores really don't have many charging stations associated with them. What's your overall take on this, Chris? I know you've written about it.
Yeah, I think, you know, from my perspective, well, first of all, the only fast charger in my town in Maine is at the grocery store. So I think that's an interesting point to make. But, you know, I think there's an extreme cost associated with this for the retailers. I think Consumer Reports' perspective was that they were calling on the retailers to help drive adoption. And I'm not sure I agree that that's their place to do that. But I'll say this, if you can't install a fast charger, a DC fast charger at your location, there's no point, because I'm not in the grocery store or even in the mall for long enough to get any amount of range from a level two charger on any, even the fastest charging EV. So, I mean, I think there's some interesting points here, but I'm not sure I agree with everything they said.
Yeah, I have trouble agreeing with it too. One of the things they point out is federal money can help with maybe $100,000 of installation costs. So your tax dollars at work, maybe installing a charger that doesn't really meet the needs of the people in the various towns that where they are. What I also found is this really flies exactly in the face of what Auto Pacific found in one of its recent studies in what EV buyers want in their public charging experience. And what they kind of want is something like a gas station experience, really. It was pretty interesting to me. They surveyed 7,200 EV owners, and they said they want things that are covered. A lot of chargers aren't even covered. You know, it's just kind of a stick or, you know, a stand out in the corner of a parking lot. I think that's, they're not particularly well lit, but people want them to be well lit. They want the prices displayed as a gas station. I mean, kind of, really, this is essentially a gas station type experience that people are looking for. They're actually going to be there longer, even with fast charging, than they would be at a gas station. But they want stuff like windshield cleaner and air pumps for refilling tires and that kind of stuff. Even vacuums, maybe a car wash. That seems more like what people want than something out in the corner of a parking lot in a big box store.
Yeah, I mean, if Walmart installs chargers in their parking lot, they're not going to take prime parking at the front of the lot to do that. They're going to stick this stuff, you know, out near the order pickup line at the back of the store or something like that. And as you said, you know, a lot of these things, the chargers here aren't covered. You know, the gas station experience is something that I would like personally, even only driving an EV, you know, once a month or so. A lot of this doesn't make sense. I think it's interesting to see who is doing it and who isn't. You know, there was a time when I wanted to figure out the hotels that were doing this. But, you know, they were very reticent to tell me those numbers.
Right.
So I think this is good research, definitely.
Well, it's interesting to me that nobody has really made a business out of this. I mean, certainly there are EV charging businesses, EVgo, Charge America, various others. They haven't really put in the kind of amenities that a gas station would have. I mean, they basically stuck chargers wherever they could figure out to stick chargers and kind of cross their fingers. They're not attended by anybody. I think that's one of the key reasons that many chargers are not working at any one time. It's nobody's paying attention to them. Nobody has anything to do with them on a day-to-day basis. Far different from a gas station experience where we have that model. We understand what a gas station experience should be like, a good gas station experience in particular. And, you know, I think that it's a profit opportunity for somebody, but nobody seems to be taking the bit in their teeth and going with it, do they?
Yeah, I mean, it's very rare for me to come across the out-of-service little flag on the gas pump, and, you know, because they have people watching those things all the time. But I can't tell you how many times I've been to EV chargers here and even down towards Boston where they just don't work. And you got to get on the phone with somebody either in a different country or across the country. And it's just a poor experience. So I can't see adding, as you said, an EV charger in the corner of a parking lot is going to help Walmart's bottom line or Target's bottom line to any huge degree without additional services to go with it.
Yeah. Again, I think the profit opportunity, profit drives a lot of business, right? I mean, that's why good things happen, is the ability to make some money from something. And I think there is that opportunity, but it just doesn't seem to be being taken by anybody. But we'll see what happens going forward. Here is a report that kind of hits close to home to me, because this is about a car company that is located very nearby me, surprisingly, in Southern California. The car company is Fisker. Certainly, Henrik Fisker has been in the news for a long, long time. He's been interviewed on the show. I've interviewed him several times through the years with his various ventures. And now they're apparently on the edge of destruction, I guess you could say, and looking for investment. And it appears that Nissan might be their savior and might invest something like $400 million in Fisker. Your thoughts?
Well, it just goes to show how hard it is to start a car company. And unfortunately for Henrik Fisker, this is his second, maybe even more than that, time around the block. And, you know, I think they had one of the reviews that I watched on the Ocean, their first EV the other day, was from probably one of the largest YouTubers in the world, saying that it was the worst car he'd ever reviewed, and outlined its numerous software and hardware shortcomings. Now, I know that they can fix a lot of that via over-the-air software, but the reality is they rolled out a sort of half-baked product here, and a lot of people are reporting problems with it. So I don't think that's helping their cause. At the same time, I don't think Nissan is necessarily I'm not going to say the best, but the strongest foundation upon which Fisker can build its future. So we'll have to see what happens there.
Well, what's shocking to me is that one of the advantages to the purported advantages to Nissan investing in Fisker is the ability to use the Fisker pickup truck platform, EV platform, and build Nissan branded and Fisker branded vehicles on the platform. It's amazing to me that Nissan, a global company with incredible resources and one of the first movers on EVs, is going to essentially a small startup for a major platform like this. I'm just literally shocked by this. You know, it's hard for me to understand how that's possible, that Nissan should have better tech on that than, or that Fisker should have better tech on that than Nissan does.
Yeah, I mean, that must mean that within the Nissan Mitsubishi sort of Renault trio there, that there's something missing that they can't get it. It's still baffling that with all the EVs that are coming out in Europe, that Nissan can't find one platform to underpin a pickup truck, needs to invest this money. But maybe they see something about the company that you and I don't. I mean, you know, they have a lot more analysts than I do, obviously. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, I mean, $400 million is a lot. Of course, Fisker has kind of changed their business model. They were trying to sell direct, and they were just getting no traction selling direct at all. So then they have looked for dealers, and their search for dealers, usually many dealers are willing to roll the dice on a new brand just on the possibility that it's going to hit. But Fisker has had their pleas mostly land on deaf ears with dealers. Very few have signed up to take on, probably hearing the footsteps that they're one foot away from bankruptcy or something like that. It's kind of interesting to me how they've gone about this, and the fact that it's kind of not working too well at all.
Yeah, you know, it's easy to get locked up in the sort of humor here. I mean, it's no people losing jobs in bankruptcy is never funny, but like, it's always easy to poke fun at companies like this. But the reality is that, you know, the fewer choices there are for buyers, that's not a good thing. I've always said, you know, the more choices, the better. So I hope they pull through with or without Nissan. And if Nissan gets a pickup truck out of the deal, that's even better. So we'll have to see.
Yeah. I'd love to have Fisker remain solvent, put out great cars, and, you know, make a lot of money for its investors and for everybody else. It'd be a good part of the auto industry. I'm not sure that that's going to happen, but that would be best case scenario. And it would be nice to see Nissan do well as well.
Yep.
So when we come back, we will be road testing some pretty cool vehicles. I was driving the Volvo S90 Recharge with a plug-in hybrid powertrain, and we'll talk about that. And Chris, you were driving what?
Drove the Hyundai Ioniq 6 for 2024. So let's get right into it.
All electric all the time. So very good. Stay with us, and we'll be right back with road tests when we come back. Join us then. Welcome back to America on the Road with Chris Teague, Jack Murad, back with you for road test time on America on the Road. And pretty interesting vehicles, I think, this time around. We try to have interesting vehicles, of course, each week, but we have a battery electric vehicle that you were driving, Chris, and I was driving a plug-in hybrid vehicle, so we can kick that around a little bit. But tell us all about the Ioniq 6 that you were driving.
Yeah, 2024 is the Ioniq 6's second model year on sale. It came out last year. And I got to tell you, Jack, I'm going to get your opinion on this too. I think it's one of the most striking EVs on sale today, and that's from any brand anywhere in the United States. And, you know, for me, if you're going to make a sedan And, you know, we always try to make automakers early on for trying to make their EVs look too futuristic or too crazy. But I think Hyundai struck a balance here. What do you think about that?
I'm not sure it's a balance, to tell you the truth. I kind of like it, but I have heard from a lot of people that they just plain don't like it. They just, I don't know whether they think it's too futuristic or just unusual looking. I think, again, it kind of makes sense to do this. I recently wrote about the Mercedes-Benz EQE sedan that kind of goes the same way in a lot of ways, not the same as the E-Class from Mercedes. I think it's a risk in a way to go off the reservation here.
I can see that. So as I take a step back here, Hyundai offers this with a few different configurations. The base model starts at just under $39,000. It's a rear-wheel drive vehicle with around 240 miles of range. My test car was the limited model, which has all-wheel drive as the range-topping model. It starts at around $52,000. It's got, as I mentioned, all-wheel drive, 20-inch wheels, and a 270-mile range. Interestingly, Jack, you can get the smaller wheels with lower trim levels and get more range, up to 316 miles in this vehicle, which is a pretty solid range number. And you can recharge up to 80% in just 20 minutes because of the high-voltage electrical architecture. So from a charging and range perspective, I think Hyundai did a good job with the car. 316 miles for the lower configurations is pretty competitive with the Model 3 and a few other sedans in the class there. The dual motor has 320 horsepower, 446 pound-feet of torque, and a 0 to 60 time of around 4.3 seconds, something like that. I got to tell you, there's never a time that I felt that I needed more power in this car. Even in the snow, that torque didn't make it feel out of control or anything like that. The drive modes really let you dial in how you want the vehicle to behave. So in sport mode, you unleash everything. It feels very quick, very powerful, but you can also go into comfort and then eco mode, which kind of tames things down a little bit and makes it more manageable in the snow. But again, the all-wheel drive helps a lot there too. The ride quality here is, I think it's pretty good. I'll say that this car does feel like a heavy electric vehicle at times, especially over broken pavement, speed bumps. We have these really annoying, I call them speed humps, but I think people call them speed tables. And over those things, you can really feel the weight in the lower part of the car as it kind of lumbers over the big bump. But other than that, on the highway, in town commuting, it's very quiet. It's relatively smooth. So no big complaints there. But I will say, unlike some others that I've tested, like the IONIQ 5 and even the EV6 to a degree, the Kia EV6, this one lets you know that there's a heavy battery under your bum when you're driving. Inside, the lower models come with cloth upholstery. Mine came with synthetic leather, heated and ventilated front seats, and power adjusted front seats. So there's plenty of room in here, both front and back. The lack of a center transmission tunnel in this car because of the battery pack that's underneath there gives you a lot more open feel, especially in the back seat where your legs don't have to be confined to one little corner of the floorboard there. So very comfortable, even with my kids now. My older daughter's now riding in the front seat, so we don't have two in the back. But my younger daughter in the booster seat in the back had plenty of room. No kicking and screaming about my seat impeding on her feet. Even with big snow boots on, she had no problems back there. It comes with a digital gauge cluster, a 12.3-inch touchscreen. You get wired Apple CarPlay and Android Auto in this car. And for me, in this car of this futuristic nature, is just a disappointment. Give me wireless. It's working well enough now that I prefer it over wired. My GR Corolla has it. It's just fantastic. You get in, start the car, and drive off. You also only get USB-A charging ports with this car up front. We've talked about this before, not charging ports, data ports. So if you have a phone like a newer iPhone that has USB-C, you're going to have to dig around and find an adapter or a different cable to hook your phone up to Apple CarPlay. So a little bit frustrating from that regard. I have seen reports that the new models, the updated sort of mid-cycle refresh of these cars, is going to add USB-C. So maybe then that will be acceptable. This car also has a full suite of advanced driver aids, including my favorite thing ever, which is the blind spot camera monitor, which when you turn on the turn signal, either left or right, it projects a camera view of the blind spot into the gauge cluster of the car. So in addition to having blind spot monitoring, you can actually see what's happening. If for people with mobility issues, you can't turn around all the way. It's just really, really helpful. As I mentioned, you get forward collision warnings, automatic emergency braking, highway driving assistance, adaptive cruise control, if I could say the word correctly. But all around, Jack, I think the limited trim of this car is a little bit too expensive for me. But I think for somebody trying to get into this and save some money, the mid-range models with rear-wheel drive, if you don't live where it snows, You get most of the best features. You get the best range of the whole product line, and you get all the great tech inside. So I think that would be my ruling on this car.
Yeah, I think it's very smart ruling, to tell you the truth, because I think one of the weird things about electrics, or many electrics, and IONIQ 6 is emblematic of that, is if you buy the highest line model, you get less range than you get with a mid-range model. And that kind of doesn't make any sense to a lot of people. You pay a premium, but you get less range, when range is one of the critical factors here. This isn't unique to the IONIQ 6, but it certainly happens in the IONIQ 6. So I think you're pointing out a very wise thing. Go mid-range, get the best range overall, and then and pay less. You don't get the amenities, but... all the amenities, but probably the best value overall.
Yeah, I think the smaller wheels are the better choice with this car.
Yeah. Well, I was driving a vehicle with one of the most complicated powertrains in the history of powertrains, I think. It's the Volvo S90 Recharge. It is a plug-in hybrid vehicle and one of a handful, I think you could probably count them on the fingers of one hand, of luxury plug-ins, sedans out there. It offers nearly 40 miles of all-electric range, which is nice. It's plug-ins, of course, as we have said over and over on the show, allow you kind of sample driving an electric vehicle without totally committing to an electric vehicle. When the battery power is exhausted, of course, it becomes just a well-mannered European sedan. It's got plenty of space for five. It's a very large car, large inside, low-key but attractive cabin. I think overall this is a good-looking vehicle and a pretty good value in a lot of ways. It's interesting. Of course, it doesn't offer the precision of a sports sedan, but I like the ride quality. It's pretty good. Predictable handling. That's what people say when it's not really sharp, right? It's still predictable. That's good. The suspension might be a little firm for some people, but not necessarily. And let's talk about powertrain here. I mean, it is turbocharged, supercharged. Uses a four-cylinder engine is both turbocharged and supercharged, so there's torque everywhere. And then there are two electric motors powered by an onboard battery pack. This total is 455 horsepower, and it's just a whopping 523 pound-feet of torque. That's a ton of torque. It drives through a regular 8-speed automatic transmission. It's quick, 0 to 60 in 4.6 seconds. I mean, you're kind of a Volvo guy. I think you still have a Volvo in the household. Quick reaction to S90 Recharge.
Yeah, we have a Volvo with a turbocharger and a supercharger, still the same 2.0 liter engine there. And I worry about the complexity, but 25,000, almost 30,000 miles in, and it's just fine. So I think maybe we'll have to see. But I drove the S60 plug-in hybrid, the Recharge, last year and loved it. Same power output, I believe. But the car manages that complexity quite well. You can't really tell that everything's happening, whatever, you know, there's no indication that there are like a million things happening when you put your foot down.
Right. No indication, and it all works well. And we hope, we cross our finger, and hope it keeps working well for years and years and years. Gets an estimated 66 MPGe, or miles per gallon equivalent, from the EPA. That isn't exactly stellar, but yeah, I guess it's okay. It's a big car. When it's operated on gasoline only, it gets 30 miles per gallon combined, according to the EPA. So that's decent. It's actually better than the conventionally powered S90. This is an interior that I like a lot. I think Volvo does great interiors. They're low-key. They provide you what you need without ostentation. I have a little Swedish background, so maybe I have a little more affinity for Scandinavian design than everybody else. But I think you like the interiors of Volvos too, don't you?
I do. I think they have some of the best front seats of any automaker in the industry today. I think they're even better than some of the ones from like Lincoln and Cadillac. And the design is minimalist and very pretty in a way that I don't think others, like Tesla, tries the minimalist thing, and it doesn't really work for me. But Volvo's pulled it off. I think their interiors are great.
Yeah, I think it looks good. A lot of rear legroom, too. I think Volvo has some connections now with China, and a lot of big sedans in China are chauffeur-driven, and the owner sits in the back seat, so you're getting a lot of rear legroom here. One of the things that kind of surprised me was the relatively small trunk space, 13.5 cubic feet of trunk space. It's, I guess, sufficient. A lot of vehicles in the class have about the same trunk space, but you would think with a car, you know, kind of this expansive, there might be a little more trunk.
Yeah, I think that's part of the packaging issues with some of the batteries and the motors that they have to jam in under the normal gas cars setup there.
All right. Then you have this infotainment system that has, you know, it's pretty new to Volvo. They have gone away from the Sensus infotainment system to a new Google-based system. It's still not all that easy to understand and use, and a lot of stuff is buried in the touchscreen, or you have to use the touchscreen and go through various screens on the touchscreen to actually get to some of the functions. That's kind of irritating, isn't it?
It is. We talked about this last week where, you know, Google built-in brings a lot of extra features and maybe adds some snappiness to the system, but it doesn't change, or at least for a lot of automakers, hasn't changed the basic interface. And for Volvo, the confusing interface remains. So there's a lot of swiping and tapping to get things done.
Right. This is a vehicle with a base price of about $67,000 for the Plus trim. And then if you go with the upper level, the ultimate trim, it's $72,000. What that really adds is the 14-speaker Harman Kardon premium sound system, ventilated seats, and alloy wheels. So you might be well advised to save the $5,000, or if you think that the Harman Kardon is worth $5,000 and the Zootier wheels, you go that direction. I might be inclined to get the lesser expensive vehicle, but I'm a minimalist, as you know, Chris.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad. And so that's it. Two pretty cool cars. IONIQ 6. I think both of these cars have some issues. They're good, but, you know, an issue or two here or there. I think if you're excited about either one of them, they provide good value and both ways to get into the electric vehicle scene, one way or the other.
Yes, that's totally true.
Well, we try to be truthful around here, among other things. And when we come back, we will have a guest who we hope is truthful as well. His name is Tiago Castro. He is a vice president at Nissan, and we'll be chatting with him when we come back. So stay with us for that right here on America on the Road. I got this letter from a reader the other day, and I thought I'd share it with you. I'm on vacation on the beach in Key Biscayne and just finished reading Dance in the Dark. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Great plot and twists I never saw coming. You're really good at creating visual images. Congrats. You made my vacation all that more enjoyable. This is just the kind of feedback an author loves to hear. I'm Jack Nierad, host of America on the Road and the author of Dance in the Dark, a crime novel inspired by true crime. Many have told me that Dance in the Dark has all the realism of Fatal Photographs, my true crime account of the famous bathing suit model murder case. That's great to hear because Dance in the Dark is filled with suspense, plot twists, and surprises, but at the same time, it's a believable story in the tradition of writers like James M. Cain, Jim Thompson, and Elroy Leonard. I'm not saying it did happen, but it could have. Dance in the Dark is available in paperback and Kindle ebook form from Amazon.com, and it's available direct from the publisher emlancey.com as well. If you have a chance, please look for it. If it makes your vacation better, we'll both be happy. That's Dance in the Dark by Jack R. Nierad at Amazon.com or emlancey.com. Thanks for giving it a look. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nierad with you, and we're at the Chicago Auto Show. Having a terrific time, thanks to Nissan partially. And with me is a terrific guest. Tiago Castro is Midwest Regional VP for Nissan North America. Thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Jack. Thanks for having us here, and thanks for being in our booth.
It's exciting to be here, right? I mean, you've got so much going on. Where do you want to start? I mean, we haven't talked to somebody from Nissan in a while. Just bring us up to date on where Nissan is these days.
Well, it's an exciting time at Nissan. You know, we had a good year last year. Our Nissan Rogue, our number one selling model, is getting a brand new refresh. We have the vehicle here. We have three other models launching this calendar year, which is exciting as well. And, you know, everybody's looking for a big year. So it is the right time. I don't know if you had a chance to take a look in our booth yet, but we had some interesting things here. The one that was really interesting is the Nissan Ariya, our all-electric vehicle that actually drove from the two poles, from North Pole to the South Pole.
Yeah, kind of an amazing feat, right?
I mean, Can you imagine this?
Yeah, bizarre.
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to prove a lot of things, right, about electric vehicles, trying to prove range, prove, the ability to work in cold weather, kind of knocks against electric vehicles. Tell us a bit how they did and how you kind of answered those questions.
You know, they were very brave, first of all, because to stay this many days, this many miles in any car is a challenge. And then the ability to explore these new technologies is also amazing. So what they were able to do is go from, you know, North Pole to South Pole with the electric vehicle. The Nissan Ariya has a 300-mile range, so they did, 20,000 miles? So you can imagine how many times they had to charge. They also were able to see that the batteries work perfectly in the cold weather. You know, range changes a little, but it does work quite a bit in a... I think it was an amazing experience. You saw them at the breakfast,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. Did they do anything special to improve range? Did they not use the heat, you know, those kind of things? Or did they just kind of go with it?
I think the idea was to go with it, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you need to get, obviously use your heat when it's in that cold.
Yeah, right.
And they did so, but they were able to use also technologies like solar technology to charge the vehicle. I thought it was quite interesting. So the car is right here, actual vehicle they used, which is a stock Ariya with different tires and little small little modifications. But even the suspension is the stock suspension, which I was pretty impressed. Yeah, and I was very proud. I drive myself all new Ariya, and I love the vehicle. You know, I drove here actually.
It is a beautiful vehicle.
It really drove me here because I used the ProPilot 2.0.
Okay, so we're able to find McCormick Place without too much difficulty.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's terrific stuff. You know, Nissan has had a kind of an interesting path with electric vehicles, right? I mean, pioneer here with a lot of vehicles. I remember going to Japan a couple times and driving Nissan Leaf, you know, early on when other people were kind of scoffing at the tech. And now you have Ariya that's right smack dab in the middle of a very important segment. I mean, tell us a bit about the journey and how it's been.
Well, we started back in 2010, if you remember, you know, the first Leaf. We had two different Leafs that we built a lot of experience. And I think a lot of trust from the organization on the technology. So bringing Ariya to the marketplace made total sense. It is an evolution. It is using the latest and greatest technology that Nissan has to offer. I just mentioned the ProPilot 2.0, where the vehicle drives itself, you know, really hands off. Eyes on the road, but hands off. It just gave us that trust and belief that it is something that we need to continue to invest. Market by market, the investment is different. The acceleration on sales will be different, but all in all, it's something that Nissan will continue to invest on.
Yeah, I mean, what's your take now? We're kind of in maybe a pause mode with the electric vehicles, or there's I think a lot of people are sensing a bit of slowdown or consumer reluctance to go to electric vehicles. Where do you think this is going to sort out?
Well, last year, electric vehicles were 8% of the industry, so it's a significant volume. It's something that we want to play in. Is it accelerating as fast as some predicted? Maybe not, but it's still accelerating. And there's growth happening. So, you know, our goal is to stay with the growth, be able to offer these amazing other vehicles you saw here, right?
Right.
We have the Pathfinder we're really excited about with now growth in volume this year. You know, we have the refreshed Rogue that I just mentioned. Sentra is here. You got the trucks out here. I mean, there's a lot of other vehicles to focus on, but the idea of electric is something that we're committed to. And I believe the U.S. industry will continue to work towards that.
Yeah. You're committed to conventional vehicles, though, too, and you have terrific ones.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
The Rogue is right in the midst of, I think, the most popular segment out there, which is the compact crossover segment. You've got to be excited to have, you know, something a bit new there. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, so, you know, we have the refreshed Rogue here. It looks amazing. A lot of appeal. We changed the fascia, we changed the size, but one of the big things is a new technology, the new IT system. We have this huge display right in the center with the Google telematics, and it's really exciting to be able to use it. It's very user-friendly. It's really something that we'll be doing all the other models, and we're excited to launch it.
Yeah.
Later on, we need to go in and check together.
Yeah, no, I'd love to see that. And I mean, that's become so important, right? I mean, this is something everybody interacts with multiple times when they're in the car, every time they're in the vehicle. And frankly, it's the source of a lot of problems if it's not working right. And I think Nissan has been a leader in getting things to work right. You got to be excited that you got something new that's even better than what you've had before.
Absolutely. And these screens are growing. The amount of information served the two customers are increasing. We got to make sure we do it right. So we have a whole team dedicated on ensuring that the IT system is working the way it's supposed to. And I'm proud to say that we've been doing a good job lately, and it's exciting.
Yeah.
And this is just going to be another example of that.
Well, and those systems, when they're not working properly, can be distracting, right? I mean, I've been in a lot of vehicles where I'm trying to sort through a menu and I'm pushing buttons and I'm, pushing places on the screen and just not getting there. It seems like the Nissan systems work very intuitively and kind of quickly. I mean, that's got to be the mindset of your designers when they're putting that together, right?
Yeah, the designers, what they need to do is, how can we make this as easy as possible for anybody that shows up that either has experience with Nissan or does not be able to find what they need to find? And, they obviously look at what are the most important items that people use the most, and those become even easier, the shortcuts. Sometimes we still have a few buttons, not just the screen, that will help you as well. But this is the goal, continue to deliver something that customers can be excited about, proud of, and then they continue to come back to Nissan.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to see this, the new Rogue, the new refreshed Rogue, and talk to you more about that. But let's talk about 2024. We're a month in now. This promises to be maybe one of the craziest years in auto history. We've had four or five crazy years in a row with COVID and all the issues. Are you essentially past any kind of supply chain issues and kind of providing the dealers with the vehicles and mix that they want, or is there still some disruptions there?
I would say there are still disruptions. We're not back, the industry is not back to 100% normal, but it has changed drastically. Big improvement. This year, what we should be able to see, it's a more stable supply of vehicles, right? We're able to provide vehicles from a full range, from the most expensive to the least expensive. And we will really try to match the vehicle supply to the demand. And that's going to be critical this year. Whoever does the best job here will win. Can we match the demand of customers to the supply? And I'm excited about this year for Nissan. And I mentioned earlier, we're going to launch the refresh Rogue and three more models. So that's always great news.
Yeah.
Product.
When you have stuff that's fresh in the in the showroom, and it works out really
well. So that's great. And then we're able to produce what customers want. So that's the plan.
And you produce a lot of your products here in the United States at various plants. Tell us a bit about that.
We have two plants in the U.S. One is in Smyrna, Tennessee. That plant actually we opened in 1983. So last year we had a big celebration. And then we have also a plant in Mississippi, in Canton, Mississippi. Both plants produce, you name it, the Rogue, the Pathfinder, so many models, the Frontier, the Leaf, they're all produced in those plants. And it's really exciting. If you ever have a chance to visit it, maybe you already did. Have you ever been?
I don't think I have. I've been to a lot of auto plants, let me tell you.
But it's phenomenal.
I've been to many Nissan plants in Japan.
Yeah, here we go.
Yeah,
probably. Maybe we need to invite you to come to the Tennessee one as well.
Yeah, I'd love that. That would be terrific. Well, what do you expect 24 will hold for Nissan beyond the new product? You think it's going to be a good sales year? I know there's some challenges with interest rates. You think those might come down? You think that will help you out a little bit?
Well, interest rates continue to be a pressure in the market. That's why it's important to find the right vehicle to the demand, right? I do think we have a good plan to do so. We will grow. We expected the industry to be, growing about 5%. Nissan wants to grow a lot faster than that. So we want to gain market share, close to a point of market share this year. So it's an important year for us. The product launch will help, but the key will be supplying the right vehicle towards the demand. And our dealers are ready to do so.
In a couple of sentences, what do you think consumers should know about Nissan these days? When they think of Nissan, what should they think about?
Well, first, outstanding looking product with great quality. And as you mentioned earlier, the latest and greatest technology. And if you think about this, this is what people want. It looks great. It has the quality that you expect, the reliability, and then the technology you need for everyday life. Nissan is a great place to be now.
Yeah. Well, So great to talk to you, Tiago Castro. Thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. You have a great day.
Yeah, you too. And that was our interview with Tiago Castro, a Nissan vice president. Thanks to him for being with us. I learned a lot when I talked with him. And I think we have time for a listener question or two, Chris. Here's a question from Peter in Bakersfield, California. He says, if I had the choice of buying a plug-in hybrid or a hybrid, and I think he probably has that choice in Bakersfield, which one should I choose? I'd love to hear your opinion on this.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, it has a lot to do with your budget, right? Because plug-in hybrids cost quite a bit more than their hybrid counterparts. It may also have to do with selection. I don't have the data right in front of me, but it feels like there are more hybrid options than plug-in hybrids in the market at the moment. I haven't counted them to be sure. And then third, I think that your driving style, right? If you have a short commute and you have the ability to charge at home, you might get away with, you know, going to the gas station once a month or maybe even less than that if you have, you know, if you don't travel outside of that range very much. But again, you know, if you don't have the ability to charge at home and you don't want to spend the extra money, a hybrid will get you a lot of the way towards the plug-in hybrid experience with fuel savings for less money.
Yeah, I think, and it depends on individual vehicles, but I think very often you're going to find a better cost down with a hybrid than with a plug-in hybrid. Of course, depending on how you use the plug-in hybrid. If you're using the plug-in and electric drive feature all the time and your electrical rates are favorable for you, that can be a great thing. But you also might have some sunk cost in terms of installing chargers and all of that kind of thing. So.
Yeah, and if you don't charge it regularly, plug-in hybrids tend to get worse gas mileage because of the weight you're towing around a larger battery pack, you know, without the benefit of using it. So
yeah, absolutely true. Multiple powertrains there. Well, when we come back, we'll have another listener question, and we'll try to sum up the automotive week for you. So stay with us. We'll be back right here on America on the Road. Welcome back to America on the Road with Chris Tejak and Rad with you for our last and abbreviated segment here on America on the Road. I think we have time to squeeze in another listener question if we do it quickly, Chris, so let's get right to that. Peter in Grand Rapids, Michigan asks this, I'm thinking of buying a new truck and I can't decide whether I should get a full-size truck like a Ford F-150 or a mid-size truck. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know what your situation is, but I think for a lot of people, mid-sized trucks are just fine, especially with the capability that they have these days. They're also easier to park, cheaper to buy, cheaper to operate, probably cheaper to insure. But I mean, if you need to tow, look, if you're looking at 10,000 plus pounds of towing, you have a large camper, trailer, large boat, you're going to have to go full size and in some cases, maybe even HD, you know. But I think for a lot of people, the capability of a mid-sized truck is just fine. Just keep an eye on your payload and your towing numbers when you're shopping.
Yeah, I think in years past, an inexpensive full-size truck was the arch enemy of the mid-size truck, but we're not seeing very many inexpensive full-size trucks these days, and I think a mid-size truck makes a lot of sense for a lot of people. We're seeing some really good mid-size trucks come into the market from Chevrolet, from GMC. We're going to see a new Ford Ranger here very soon. Toyota Tacoma is all new, so a lot of good choices among mid-sized trucks. I would have a tendency to look in that direction. Easier to maneuver in garage, as you mentioned. Before we go, I'd like to mention my newest book, Dance in the Dark. It's a crime thriller inspired by true crime. And, of course, crime is a passion of mine. I don't commit them, but I do write about them frequently. It's available at Amazon in both ebook and paperback form. If you like our show, please pass it on. Listen on this radio station each week and let your friends know where you hear America on the Road. And of course, we're available as a podcast too, aren't we, Chris?
Yes, absolutely. A quick Google search for America on the Road podcast will bring us up on all the major platforms. We're on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, many, many more. So pick your favorite, leave us a review, follow us or subscribe to us. That will help us out a lot. And we hope to see you on the road going forward.
Yeah, we do. Absolutely. If you want to give us a 5-star review, we would be so honored by that. We would love that a lot, and to subscribe to it and be part of the America on the Road family. Thanks to our Sports Byline Network stations for carrying America on the Road. And we do appreciate that. We do appreciate terrestrial radio. I love turning on the radio and just seeing what's going on locally. It's pretty cool. And most of all, thanks to you for listening. We do appreciate it. We know you can choose from various things to listen to these days, whether it's podcasts or on the radio. So we're honored that you're listening to America on the Road. And we hope you join us again right here next time for another edition of America on the Road. We'll be right back. Inner peace, self-respect, emotional fulfillment. Are you finding these worthwhile goals difficult to achieve? Are you looking for success and satisfaction in your job but not finding it? Are you thinking about starting a business but don't know what will set it apart from all the others? You can continue to struggle on your own, or you can unleash the undeniable power of the GR Factor. I'm Jack R. Nered, host of America on the Road. For years, I've found success in business and in my personal life by using the concepts I outline clearly in my book, The GR Factor. Your best self is inside you right now, just waiting to be unleashed. Inspiring all that is the best in you, the GR Factor will guide your journey, elevate your game, recast your relationships, and transform your daily life. If you want to change your life for the better, read The GR Factor. It's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and at emlancey.com. That's The GR Factor by Jack R. Nered. Thanks for checking it out.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.